Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren McFarland high atop Bridgestone Arena. Predators are out on the ice going through practice. Be a week of practice before they head to Edmonton to get geared up for the qualifying round. And don't forget, they'll have the exhibition game on July 30th against the Dallas Stars. Willie Donick will be back in the fold a little bit later this hour. We'll also hear a little bit from Tyson Nash, who covers the Coyotes, former player. Learn a little bit more about the opponent of the Predators. That also coming up this hour. Chase is on vacation this week. He'll be back on Monday. We say hello and good afternoon to Adam Vingan. He covers the Predators for The Athletic. That's where you can find his work. Adam, how you doing?
Hi, Darren.
We good?
Look at me.
We good? Hey, look at that, huh? Huh?
Hey.
Very good. You're not hidden behind Fang Vision, the big jumbotron. I can actually see you. You can see me. This is good.
Yeah.
How was your weekend?
It was good. Uneventful, but that's how life typically is these days. But staying healthy and safe. My temperature coming in today was a cool 97.9 degrees. So as cool as a cucumber over here.
Well, it will be anything but uneventful moving forward here. Let me just start with what we were just talking about at the end of the last hour. It is pretty amazing when you think about all the tests, the protocols the NHL just did, and to come back with zero positive tests, pretty amazing. What do you make of that?
Well, I think it's great that the NHL is having success in that regard before they enter the bubble.
Yeah,
just because your hope is that once the players are in Toronto and Edmonton, of course, depending on which conference they play in, that those ultra secure, as the NHL is calling them, the phase four secure zones, you hope that similarly to the NBA in Orlando, that once they are encased in those bubbles, that they'll be much safer. So the fact that, you know, all of these teams in their home markets are able to practice and they're not turning up positive coronavirus tests, especially when you consider some of the markets that have seen spikes in coronavirus, including our very own. It certainly is encouraging to know that many players have not suffered with the virus.
What are we officially calling this, by the way? I've been calling it July training camp. Willie tweeted out summer camp, which kind of made me laugh. But what are we officially calling this?
I've been calling it the return to play training camp.
Okay. Return to play training camp. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's play coach. All right. Let's do that. Let's have a little fun on radio. So first line. So do we believe game one against the Coyotes, it will indeed be the Jofa line?
Yes.
And if so, what do you think of that?
Well, I wrote about it today on theathletic.com, which everybody could go check out if they so choose. But I understand why John Hines made that decision. It's just that under these circumstances in this return to play training camp, summer camp, July training camp, whatever you want to call it, there's very little time for experimentation. It's not the same as a normal training camp where you have 4 weeks of practice and six or seven preseason games before your first regular season game. These guys have 2 weeks of practice before an exhibition game, and then 3 or 4 days later, they're playing in the playoffs or the postseason. So there's less time to mix and match lines. So you hope you find, as I said in the story, you hope that the Johansson line can recapture its magic. And it was certainly nowhere near as effective this season as it has been in past seasons, although they were not together anywhere near as much. And you hope that the time off allowed Victor Arvidsson to heal from his injury, allowed Philip Forsberg and Ryan Johansson to refocus and refresh, and that they can pick up where they've left off in previous years.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask you, because you say in that article, can they recapture their magic? How do you answer that? Do you think there's a chance they could recapture their magic on the return to play?
I do, but I really do think that, and I said this in the story as well, that I believe, and Darren, you can tell me if I'm being a bit hyperbolic here, but I believe that the success of the Predators' top line as well as the entire team hinges on the play of Ryan Johansson. I think if Ryan Johansson returns to play the way he did during the regular season, this team is tough. Just because you can't have a number one center playing like that in the postseason. So for their sake, they better hope they can recapture their magic. But I really do think more so than any other player on the team, it hinges on 92.
Well, I agree with you, and I'll tell you, I'll take it even a step further. I know fans over the years at times, and it's 82-game seasons, a long season, and there are two guys, and one is on this team, the guy we're talking about, and a guy that's a former Predator that's no longer on this team, that at times the fan base would get frustrated during the course of a long regular season. Ryan Johansson, of course, is the guy that's currently on the team, and you probably know where I'm going with the other guy. In PK mm-hmm. Subban, right? But
yes.
I will say this. They also got paid big bucks, and we always say you get judged on the big stage and the bright lights, and you get judged on your play in the playoffs. You could certainly make the case, too, that both have certainly had their moments where they have shined big time in the playoffs, and that's why you pay guys the money, right? So I guess you're asking the question, can Ryan Johansson – return to, you know, form of what we've seen where he's had some big playoff moments.
Right, and then remember, of course, that he signed his 8-year contract this summer
after
of the Stanley
2017,
Cup
yeah, no doubt.
So,
and
so
he was critical until he got hurt, right? He was very critical.
He was amazing.
And
he
there
was
is
amazing.
Success, yeah, until he got hurt.
Yes. Yes, he was amazing in that playoff series. And I think what sort of worked against Ryan Johansson over the past 3 years is that, I mean, in a way, I think that performance and the what if he hadn't gotten hurt, what that could have meant for the Predators and potentially winning the Stanley Cup, I think that has worked against him for the past 3 years because you've seen what he can do when he's motivated and when he's playing on the top of his game. So whenever he's not playing like that, it looks worse by comparison. And I think the fact that he has proven he can do that and hasn't been able to do it with the same frequency over the past 3 years, you know, I do think in a way it has worked against them.
All right.
In the minds of fans.
Yep. I don't disagree with that. So, second line, you're going to have Matt Duchene centering. I don't think there's going to be any argument there. Who's going to be on either side of Duchene?
Kyle Turris and Mikael Granlund.
Okay. So, no drama there. So, you think that's – and so, how do we think that line is going to look?
I don't know because I've really never seen it before because they really have no experience together.
Okay, so let me ask it this way. How do you feel about Turris then being on the wing? I'll phrase it that way.
Well, where else are you going to put him? I mean, that's yep. if you want to take advantage of Kyle Turris' skill set, where are you going to put him? And that was the entire issue during the first half of the season with the former coach, was the former coach did not put him in a position to succeed, in my opinion. And he was playing fourth-line center when he wasn't being scratched. So John Hines hopes that putting him in a top-six role will allow him to continue to play better, which he was doing under John Hines because he had more responsibility. But, this is a conversation for a different time, but, you know, with a flat salary cap next season and the cap hovering around there for possibly longer depending on league revenue, you know, I think a prudent financial decision that the Predators should seriously consider is buying out Kyle Turris during the summertime. Now, that doesn't affect our current conversation, but I think it's a conversation that needs to be had.
And obviously the key to that line on the return to play would be Ken Granlund. You know, you want to go back to, you know, they get their magic back. Can he get his magic back heading into the pause? Because obviously we know he was playing quite well under head coach John Hines.
Yes, he was. And it kind of goes back to the Turris a little bit in the sense that those are the two players who saw the largest increase in their responsibilities after the coaching change. I mean, if you just look at time on ice, but if you want to break it down to even more, whether it's, you know, what line they were playing on, how much power play time, how much penalty kill time they were getting, you know, John Hines treated those two a lot differently than Pierre Laviolette did in terms of how often he put them on the ice in big-time situations.
Okay, now the most consistent line all year was the third line. Nick Bedino centering that third line with Craig Smith on one side, Rocco Grimaldi on the other. So we expect that he is not going to mess with that formula that has worked all year. But I guess the big question is, and we'll just stick with the theme that you've been putting out there with, can they recapture their magic? Can they just keep their magic intact? Can they come back after 4 months and pick up where they left off?
I think so, because, you know, they play a no-frills style of game. You know, they're not a line that's reliant on skill, like the Johansson line and the Duchesne line. They're a pretty straightforward bunch. They're fast. They shoot the puck. They get around the net. I think it's easier to replicate or to pick up where you left off when your line plays like that versus if you're more focused on skill, playing in more of an east-west game versus a north-south game. So I'm confident that they'll pick up where they left off.
All right, and finally, that fourth line. How do you think John Hines is going to comprise the fourth line?
Well, based on the first week of camp, the likeliest combination is Kelly Yarncroke, Colton Sissons, and Austin Watson, which I find to be interesting. You know, you have three veteran players and then three players who have experience playing together in the past, but down the stretch of the season, Austin Watson was frequently scratched under John Hines. I'm curious about what perhaps changed in John's mind to possibly put Austin back into the lineup more regularly. But, if that's the line I know it's the quote-unquote fourth line, so it's not the line that, most people are focused on. But, I really liked the play individually of Jakob Trenin and Colin Blackwell during the course of the season. And that's the line I think that both of those players would go on. Personally, I would, if I had to choose, I would put one of them in the lineup over Austin Watson from a statistical standpoint. But I understand what John is trying to do with the line he has on the ice.
Okay, you took it. We know that Kelly Yarncroke and Colton Sissons will be definitely on that line. But I was going to say the one that was intriguing, it does look like right now they're going to start with Austin Watson. Certainly, he's got all the experience this time of year. But as you said, he was not in the lineup when they came to pause. In fact, the fourth line, I believe, when they hit the pause button after the Montreal win, was what, Kyle Turris? Wasn't even
was
Victor Arvidsson and Trenin?
I think Trenin, Turris, and Arvidsson was the quote-unquote fourth line in
right.
The last game of the regular season.
Yeah. So, but you think do you think Trenin or Blackwell would be first up if they made a change?
Well, I think that Blackwell had played more games during the regular season, at least offhand. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he was certainly in the lineup more often than Trenin. But I like Trenin as a potential breakout performer, just because he has the physical frame and the scoring ability. I think that works well in the postseason. You know, he's a big guy. You know, he's got a good shot. He's not afraid to mix it up. We saw him, buckle the knees of the Den Ochara, for God's sake, if you remember that.
Oh yeah.
So I think Trenin. I like Trenin as if he could get into the lineup. As if you had to ask me who was my choice for the Freddie Goudreau in 2017, Rocco Grimaldi in 2019 breakout performer role, I would put Jakob Trenin.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. By the way, I think there's no doubt in the small samples that we've seen Jakob Trenin, he's got by far the biggest upside. There's no doubt about it. He was making things happen, right, when he was out there. And I'm not taking anything away from Colin Blackwell. And like going back to the beginning part, Austin Watson has all the experience, and he's had good playoff games in series, right? He was critical in that run to the Stanley Cup. I mean, that the penalty kill that he was a big part of, I mean, they shut everybody down that playoff run. But that was, that was years ago. So we're going off right now. I don't disagree with that. I think Trenin, I'm very curious to see, while we have an idea right now, but I'll be very curious when it's time to make the decision on August the 2nd, if indeed that is the fourth line.
Yeah, and, you know, I asked John Hines this question the other day. I asked him, at what point would he like to have a clear idea of what his lineup is going to be for game one against Arizona? And he said, by the end of this week or early in the week in Edmonton. So I think the lineup that they put on the ice for the exhibition game against Dallas a week from Thursday will be as close to the real thing as you're going to get for game one against Arizona on August 7th.
Okay, we know what the first D pairing will be, the captain Roman Josi,
yeah, no shock
and
there.
Ryan Ellis. So let's quickly talk about Roman Josi. So Roman Josi gets the nod. First time he's been a finalist for the Norris Trophy. He's in good company with Carlson and Hedmonton. Can he be the first Predator defenseman to actually win the award? Which is hard to believe.
Well, I think he should. Yeah.
Considering that's what they've been known for, right?
Right. And it's hard to believe the fact that he's only the third Predators defenseman to be a finalist.
Right.
You know, not just the fact that – just not the fact – I mean, it's a bit – it boggles my mind that no Predators defenseman has ever won the award. But then when you consider the amount of high-quality defensemen that have come through or have been in Nashville, you know, only three have been Norris Trophy finalists: Shea Weber multiple times, P.K. Subban, and now Roman Josi. You know, I think that Roman should win the award. I think I've been pretty clear throughout the last several months, even before the regular season ended, that Roman Josi should be the favorite for the award. And I think a lot of people were coming around on that idea when the regular season ended. My gut tells me, though, that while I think there are enough voters for the award who see Roman Josi's all-around impact, there's also a lot of voters who simply look at points and say John Carlson had 75 points, which is 10 more than Roman Josi, and that's enough for me to vote. So, you know, I hope that Roman wins because I think he absolutely deserves it. But something tells me it's not going to be that easy when you have to convince when you think about some of the voters that vote on the award.
Yeah. Okay. Second D pairing, is it Ekholm and Fabbro?
Yes.
Okay. And finally, the third D pairing. Is it going to be the third D pairing that we saw going into the break, the pause, Holzer and Tenorti, the two big trees, or is it going to be Ham, Hughes, and Weber?
I think for game one of Arizona, I think it's going to be Tenorti and Holzer. But I would not be surprised if basically the third pairing is swapped out like every other game. Like if Holzer and Tenorti started game one and it was Ham, Hughes, and Weber in game two, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if John rotates the third pair. But I think just based on the amount of ice time that Jared Tenorti had under John Hines, I mean, I know Holzer was a trade deadline acquisition, so he was a smaller body of work with the team. But, you know, the most used defensive pair for John Hines in the 28 games that he coached was Jared Tenorti and Matthias Ekholm. So I think that Tenorti has the edge as the quote-unquote fifth defenseman, which it makes Holzer the sixth by default.
Okay. And finally, game one.
Oh, God.
Who will be in between the pipes? The question I'm sure John Hines is already sick of. Who will be in between the pipes for game one?
Oh, man. It's a tough question. It really is. But
save the best for last.
I have maintained that UC Soros should start game one. I think when you look at this series from an analytical standpoint, which I know that I do because I'm a huge nerd, when I look at this series from an analytical standpoint, the Arizona Coyotes have arguably the most underrated goaltending tandem in the league, and I'm sure you'll talk about this with Tyson Nash, Darcy Kemper and Antti Raanta,
yep,
both of whom were fabulous this season. If you're looking at it, I mean, I know that it's more than just numbers. You have to actually play the game. But when you look at the series, when you plug in UC Soros versus one of those two, and then versus when you look at Pecorine versus one of those two, it gives the Predators a greater chance to win if UC Soros is in that. So I expect both goaltenders to play in that series, especially with 3 games and 4 days to start with back-to-backs in games 2 and 3. But I would go with UC Soros in game one. That's my call.
Very interesting. Okay, we'll see as we get a little bit closer how indeed that plays out. Adam, good stuff. Won't be the last time we chat. We'll be here, I guess, tomorrow and Thursday as well. So thanks for doing this, and we'll chat soon.
All right, Darren, talk to you soon.
All right, go check out his work at The Athletic. He covers the Predators. He's Adam Vinken, and we do appreciate him stopping. That was good, kind of going through the roster. What do we think it's going to look like for Game 1? All right, we'll come back. Let's talk about the opponent with Tyson Nash, former player and now TV analyst for the Coyotes. He's been doing it for many, many years, does a really good job, full of personality. We're going to learn a little bit more about the opponent the Predators will face in this qualifying round. We'll do that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5, The Game. Let's learn a little bit more about this opponent. Tyson Nash is indeed on the line with us, Fox Sports Arizona, former player in the league, and he now joins us. Tyson, how you doing?
I'm doing good, boys, doing good. I think I'm excited like you guys that we're going to get to talk hockey once again and watch some playoff hockey or whatever they're calling this, play-in, playoff hockey. Doesn't matter. We got hockey.
That's how we have felt all week. It has been so nice to see players. Yes, it's been a practice, but it has been nice to see something live in front of us. So how have things been? So that's what this week has been like for us and for the Predators. How has it been where you are?
Yeah, you know what? It's been really good. The energy, the excitement to be back, you know, which you weren't sure how, you know, what was going to happen with, you know, obviously the fear factor of this and how it was all really going to work out. You know, the infections and staying safe and all this stuff. But I think for the guys, what I've really seen is now that everyone's been tested daily and they know the procedure, I think they're just happy to be back with their teammates in the locker room, on the ice. You can see the excitement. And I think all of it, all of the, you know, the craziness that this world, you know, that's happening in the world right now goes out the window when those guys hit the ice and they're having a ton of fun. You know, it's been the practices. Some have been good. Some have been, you know, you're seeing the rust. I mean, these guys have been off for a long, long time. So you definitely see some of the rust. The Coyotes had a scrimmage yesterday. Rick Tocchet wasn't, you know, all that excited and happy with the way the team practiced. He wanted them to see a little bit more intensity, a little bit more bite to their game as things get closer to game one with Nashville on August 2nd.
I realize none of us know the answer to this, but here goes. That's what we do on Sports Talk Radio, right? We just speculate or just give our opinions, and because no one, we've never seen this before, none of us in our lifetime. So with that being said, you understand the rigors of an 82-game regular season. You understand the toll that it takes on your body and just the mentality as you have to amp yourself up to go into the playoffs. And in a lot of cases, most guys are walking in at, you know, or skating in at 70%, 75%, 80%, whatever the number is. Most are not 100%. But as we know, everything has been, went away for 4 months. And now they have to get back out there. And it's not game one of an 82-game regular season in October. It's game one of essentially the playoffs. Well, it is the playoffs. And so how do you try to wrap your mind around that as a player?
Well, it's difficult. It has to be. I mean, you're sitting there, and as you mentioned, you know, when you're a veteran guy or a rookie, you're getting ready for the regular season, you're going through training camp, you're biding your time. You're like, I don't want to peak right now. I mean, you got a whole 82-game season to go.
Right.
But it's the exact opposite for these guys now. They're going from zero, which a lot of these guys have been feet up on the couch watching Netflix and show after show, to all of a sudden, all right, boys, we're back and we're going to play playoff hockey in a best-of-five series against the Nashville Predators. We better be at our peak. So it's very difficult to train that way, train your body, train your mind. And the mind's the other part. You know, I'm a broadcaster, and I'm sitting there going, how weird is this? Like, we're not allowed at the Hub Cities. We're going to be at Gila River Arena watching and calling the games off the Jumbotron with no one in the building, and you're trying to recreate that excitement of playoff hockey and trying to bring it to the people at home. But I'm like, forget us. I'm like, forget us. What about the players? I mean, playoff hockey, the best part about it is, you know, of course, playing for a Stanley Cup, but the best part about it is playing for the fans. And
yeah, the atmosphere.
You know what?
Yeah,
the atmosphere, the crowd, and you guys know that at Bridgestone Arena. It's one of the best places to watch a game and hear a game. I mean, it's nuts. That's what gets you fired up as a player. So to recreate that as a player, create your own intensity and energy throughout a game is going to be so, so difficult.
So I guess the question that I was going to ask you that we don't have the answer to, but since you played the game, and you would give probably a better answer than us, what are we in for? What is this product going to look like? Because you're going to have healthy bodies, but there is going to be a rust factor. Yeah, they're doing this now. They're doing training camps, and there'll be an exhibition game and some inter-squad scrimmages. But, you know this. That's not live action, and you can't really simulate that. So how do you think it'll look in a couple of weeks, the product, once we get going on August the 1st?
Well, I think, you know, just with practices and watching how things are being handled and you know, the temperature being raised so quickly, I think first and foremost, you got to find a way to stay healthy. You don't want to pull a groin because you're trying to get to another level, or have some kind of nagging injury going into playoffs. So, I think what you're going to see when that puck is dropped, I think, it'll be a little bit sloppy. I think the players are going to be focusing on just playing a simple game, but you're going to see the work factor. You're going to see these guys put the hard hats and the work boots on, and they're going to go out there and battle, and I think that's what it's going to take. It's going to be that first time you get run into the boards, that stinky glove in the face. It's going to all of a sudden you're like, all right, boys, we're in one here. And I don't know if you guys have watched the UFC at all, but I think that's kind of what's happened in that environment. I think once you get into the ring, it's weird because there's no crowd, there's no one screaming, but all of a sudden you get punched in the mouth, and it's like, oh, okay, here we go. We're in one here.
Yeah, that's a good point. Tyson Nash on the line with us. I want to ask you one nerdy broadcasting question, then I promise we'll talk to you about the Coyotes, who the Predators are going to face. I walked in safe distance with Hal Gill into the arena today and up to our broadcast site with our mask on. And I was just talking to him about a guy who played in the league like you and how you go about the broadcast because, like you said, Hal Gill and Pete Weber, for the radio purposes, were the flagship station, and they will be broadcasting the game, like you said, looking at monitors and looking at the Jumbotron here in Bridgestone Arena with nobody else. And Hal goes a lot off of live action, right? He's watching action that most of the fans don't see because he's a player and he sees things developing and things where it's going before anybody else does, right? So being there really serves him well. How about you? Because the same deal, you played the game, you understand the certain nuances during the course of a game that you probably pick up on. It being there in the arena watching the game live, but you're probably not going to be able to do that. Well, you're not on a monitor or a Jumbotron. Have you thought about that?
Oh, I have. And, you know, I am I'm a hockey nerd. You know, broadcasting is still, even though I've been doing it for over 10 years, it still feels new to me. This is going to be new to me. So I've gone back and actually watched some old games that we've broadcast, and I've watched them on TV and kind of, you know, just, hey, this is what it's going to kind of feel like. Like, this is what I'm going to have to get used to. And the other weird thing that people don't understand is that it's not our feet. So it's not our camera guys. It's not me now going, hey, like, when I'm in a broadcast, I go, okay, that play just happened. I go, give me that last save by Pecorino. Give me that pass. Give me this. I want to, telestrate. I want to talk about this. I have to talk about what we get given. I mean, I don't get to ask for any replays, and that's typically what happens. So you're just going to have to go with the flow and just kind of, fly by the seat of your pants, which is, I don't really care. I just want to be talking hockey. I want to be watching hockey. I just want to get my mind off of things for a while, and hockey's going to do that for a lot of people.
We're talking to Tyson Nash of the Arizona Coyotes as they get ready for the play-in series, qualifying round, whatever it's called, against the Nashville Predators. So let's talk some hockey. Let's talk about this club. It's changed a lot over the last year or so with some additions. And I like the mix of this roster, veteran players, young up-and-coming players. And I think in this, watching the season unfold, my thoughts on your club were they're close, maybe not quite there, but with this format, it seems to change things. So what are your thoughts on how this roster can handle a best-of-five series against Nashville?
Well, I obviously when you get to the playoffs, and everyone talks about it, it was like that as a player for me. You just have to get there, and anything can happen. And we have seen that. It's not always the best teams throughout the regular season that win, not even close. I mean, you get a hot power play, you get a goalie that's all of a sudden stands on his head. We saw it in Arizona a number of years ago when Mike Smith got hot. We took down the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round. We took down the Nashville Predators shortly thereafter. And, I mean, they were unstoppable once they got that momentum and they got in that zone you hear players talk about. And, I think the Coyotes are built that way with Darcy Kemper and Antti Raanta. If they can find their game in a hurry, and you're going to have to because the first play-in, playoffs, whatever you call it, against Nashville is best of five. So that there's no time to get into a slump and find your game. You have to be, and what Rick Tocchet's talking about right now is a fast starter. We need everyone who typically starts the regular season fast find that game and find their legs in a hurry. So I like the way they're built. They've added some talent up front, not near as talented as the Nashville Predators. But I think the Coyotes, they really rely on their work ethic and their tenacity and their feistiness, the way they forecheck. And they're going to have to do that because Nashville has some of the best D in the league as well. But when you face pressure and there's somebody in your face and chasing you down every time you touch the puck or running it into the 10th row, I don't care how good you are as a defenseman, that's difficult to handle night in and night out.
How much of an X factor has, and I know it's hard to change teams in the middle of a season, but Taylor Hall, that trade requiring him, how much of an X factor has he been and can he continue to be for this club?
Well, I even think that, when the stoppage happened and now you're coming back and playing again, it's almost like your second season, and I think, when he got traded here, even though he is a superstar, there's lots of nerves. There's lots of intangibles. There's lots of things going on. You're trying to find a new place to live. You're bringing your girlfriend. You're trying to find all that stuff. You're trying to introduce yourself to your teammates. All eyes are on you because you're Taylor Hall, and that's not an easy thing to do. Now I think he's just come in and just playing, and he can take that next step. And he is a superstar, and I expect him to really do some damage in the playoffs. And there's also a lot of young guys up front on this Coyotes roster, and Jacob Chychrun on the back end. I can't wait to see what these kids do, because I don't think that you can really justify a person's career or as an NHL player until you see how they react at the highest level, which is playoffs. So I can't wait to see some of these young guys.
You mentioned your two goaltenders in Darcy Kemper and Antti Raanta, and the Predators in a similar situation with two guys capable of being a starter. Obviously know what Pekka has done in his career, and now UC Saros is starting to come into his own. So when you view this format and then even the playoffs after, whichever team is so lucky to advance, do you look at it as the teams that do have those two guys that could potentially be number ones for another team, do you think that they have more of the advantage because it'll take two goaltenders to potentially win the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, you have to have it. You look at any team that's won, and they always have the backup goaltender come in and help out in some capacity. And I don't know if we're going to see that in the best of five, the first series against each other, Nashville and Arizona. But at some point, if you get to the dance and get to the final round for the cup, I mean, there's going to be games where your backup goaltender has to come in. There could be injury issues with your number one guy. I mean, you just might need to give him a breather and a reset if he's struggling for a game. You don't want to see him get shelled, 8-1 if he just doesn't have it that night. You get him out of the net, you get your backup in, and that can really create a spark as well. So the Coyotes have two of the best, and I think that's going to be a big focus in this series is the goaltending.
Finally, Tyson, Phil Kessel's got so much experience, especially with his time in Pittsburgh this time of year. How has he fit in to that roster?
Well, he struggled all year. I won't deny that. But it has come, you know, to everyone's knowledge that he had some nagging injuries that just didn't go away. He had that that man games, that Iron Man streak, if you will. And I think he tried to play in games that typically hockey players couldn't play through just to keep that streak alive. So he's healthy. He's talked a lot about that. He's re-energized. And a lot like Taylor Hall, I mean, these guys are superstars. I mean, Phil Kessel is an absolute machine when it comes to playoff hockey. Nobody on at least the Coyotes roster has that type of experience, that type of pedigree and resume at that level of play. So I really expect big things out of Phil. I think that as a player, when you get into the playoffs, some guys have it, some guys don't. Some guys can take another step, and Phil Kessel is that guy. And I can't wait to see it. I know Rick Tocchet's got a lot of experience with him, and he expects to see it as well.
Who was the hottest player going into the shutdown?
I think it would have to be Connor Garland for the Coyotes. Connor Garland, he's an interesting guy. He's really making a name for himself around the league. And even Taylor Hall said it. He goes, this guy's my winger. But he goes, I had no idea who this guy was. I didn't even know he played in the league. And now he's playing with me. He goes, and I love him. He goes, I love him. The guy is just, he's relentless. He's skilled. He's talented. He can play on your fourth line. He can play on your first line. He can play power play. The guy can do it all, and he's not a big guy, and you love to see it. He's the little engine that could.
Yeah, I was just curious because we've been trying to figure out if the hottest guys going into the break or the shutdown, the pause, can remain hot coming out, right? That's what everybody's going to try to figure out with their team. So I was just curious who you kind of deemed was the hottest guy going into the pause, and we'll see what the return 4 months later looks like. That's what we're trying to figure out here, too.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think you can throw all that out the window, though.
Yep,
I don't believe there's any carryover. I do believe there's carryover in games now, but as far as, you know, what you did the regular season, that's the best part about it. Everyone starts at zeros again. Everyone gets a fresh, clean slate, and it's new. It's a different brand of hockey in the playoffs, and I cannot wait to watch it.
We are with you. Thanks so much for the visit. Really good to talk to you. Thanks for doing this, and can't wait for August the 2nd.
All right, boys. We'll see you on the tubes.
Okay. Thanks, Tyson.
See ya.
That is Tyson Nash, former player, now, as you just heard, longtime broadcaster with the Arizona Coyotes on Fox Sports Arizona. Good stuff from him, learning a little bit more about the opponent for the Predators. We'll come back. More here at Bridgestone Arena on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Good stuff from Tyson Nash talking about the Predators' opponent, the Coyotes, Game 1, August 2nd. RockNashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's good-to-go initiatives, CDC updates, and ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's RockNashville.com. Little Braves update coming up to kick off the fourth and final hour of the program. Kelly Krull, who is the new Braves sideline reporter, Fox Sports Braves. We will get into all things Atlanta Braves, including the chop on sign, no longer at Truist Park. And will they have the chant as well? Of course, we don't know. There'll be anybody there to do it, so it doesn't really matter, I guess, on that front for now. But we'll get into that coming up. At 1 o'clock, a couple things to pass along as we're sitting here, Bridgestone Arena. Predators out on the ice, going through a little July training camp, return to play training camp, summer camp, whatever you want to call it. Just saw where the three finalists for the Hart Trophy. Talked to Adam Vinken earlier this hour, where Roman Josi is a finalist for the Norris Trophy. Nobody has ever won from the Predators in the Norris Trophy. When you think about all the great defensemen they've had, it's a tragedy to actually say that. But the three Hart Trophy finalists were Leon Draisaitl of Edmonton, Nathan MacKinnon of Colorado, and Artemi Panarin for the New York Rangers. So that's the three Hart Trophy finalists. And also wanted to pass along Marquise, I saw where, I guess, the governor of New York, Andrew Cuomo, had banned fans from sporting events in the state, so Syracuse will not be allowed to have fans for their home games this upcoming season. It is pretty interesting to see. I was surprised to see how many NFL teams have come out, including the Giants and the Jets. And although they're not in New York, they're technically in East Rutherford, New Jersey. They've said they will not have fans. The Eagles have said they will not have fans. Already a lot of NFL teams coming out and saying that they're prepared to go this season without fans.
Yeah, I mean, but we kind of figured that, right?
Like, my, not really. Like, honestly, NFL? I don't know. I kind of thought they'd probably operate at 20% or something, 25%.
Yeah. Because didn't Miami at first have, like, a plan to to kind of implement fans into their stands? So
yes.
I thought that maybe that's the route that teams were going to go to. And obviously with college football, everybody's like, oh, we're just going to have full. We're going to be full in Neyland Stadium in the fall, which that's not going to be the case. Yeah. But, I mean, it's big enough to where you can social dist. I mean, NASCAR's done it with Bristol and with their Speedway, so I don't know why.
But haven't the Miami Dolphins, they've been socially distancing for years, right? They've been at a safe distance at their games. Jacksonville, Tampa, and all the Florida teams have been, I think, at a safe distance in the stands for years.
Yeah, like if you watch a Florida Marlins scrimmage, it does not look any different from an actual Florida Marlins game.
No,
exactly the same. Except there's like less paper bags on heads at those games than it is actual games.
That's true. Now the Bucks, in all seriousness, they, I guess the Colts get to my brain, they were going to have, probably, I would say, a season of sellouts, I would think, with Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski. I would think they're at a pretty high level down there at a fever pitch of fans being excited. But so they were the one, but they haven't been drawing well. But this year they would have drawn really well. Like I said, they probably would have sold out all their games, but I'm just, I guess, surprised to see this many teams coming out and saying, as of right now, there will not be fans in stands for a lot of teams.
And I'll ask you, because someone asked me this before, if they were to allow fans in the stands, would you be comfortable going to those games?
You're asking me?
Yes.
Well, I guess tell me the setup. You know, what are we talking about? Opera 20-25%?
Yeah, let's say 25-50%.
I would, yes. Personally, yes. You talking about at Nissan Stadium?
Yes, at Nissan Stadium. Yeah, I'm not talking about like First Tennessee, like, yeah, a little smaller, but you know, I'm talking about at Nissan Stadium or at a college football stadium.
If I were sitting in the stands at Nissan Stadium, I would be fine. And if I had to get up and go, then I would make sure that I have a mask on. If you had to go to the bathroom or you had to go to the concession stand, and I don't know. I need to see the setup. I would need to see what the concession stand looks like. You know, if there's a line, you know, how does the line look? I would evaluate that before, because I've already done that. You know, I told the story when I got back from vacation. We were going to go to an ice cream shop, you know, right across the street. And, you know, it's all 30-plus people packed in there, nobody with mask on. And I was like, nope, we're not going in there. That does not look – I don't want ice cream that bad. We ended up going to another place, another ice cream place, and found it and felt a lot safer, and people were wearing masks, better setup. But if I don't feel like the situation looks or feels right, I'm not doing it. So – it would all, but I wouldn't be afraid to sit in the stands, because they at a 20-25% capacity, they have people spread out outdoors. No, I'd do it.
Yeah, I think I would too, especially when you're getting to a 100,000, you know, people stadium and you're spread it out amongst the whole entire stadium. I think it'd be fine as long as they make it to where it's mandatory to wear masks. Like, I don't want to hear none of that. You know, we encourage you to please wear your mask in the stadium. As long as they say, hey, look, if you're going to get in this stadium, you got to wear your mask. And yeah, you don't have to wear it, you know, throughout the game or when you get into your seats. But when you get out of that seat, you got to have have that mask on, and they have to make it mandatory, and they have to enforce it. And I think if as long as they can do that, I'll be perfectly fine with going to a game.
We'll come back. We'll start the fourth and final hour with Kelly Kroll. We'll talk a little bit about the Braves and her new job duties. We'll do that on the other side. Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.